Welcome to episode 205 of Your Career Podcast. Natasha Hawker is the Managing Director of Employee Matters, with a fascinating background in finance with companies including Westpac, Fuji International Finance, and BZW. She transitioned into recruitment and then onto human resources roles within global management consulting firms before setting up her own HR business. Now, I've known Natasha for 5 years and I've always been impressed by her extensive knowledge of human resources and all things from hire to fire and everything in between, which incidentally is the title of her excellent book. Now, with the challenging COVID year we have all had, organizations navigating the complexities of HR during changing and uncertain times have been fortunate to have someone as well versed in all things HR as Natasha. Let's hear her story. I know you'll enjoy this episode. And let's welcome Natasha Hawker to the show. Good morning, Natasha.
Good morning, Jane. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And being in HR, I think it's very timely with all the changes that are going on in the world when it comes to employment. And so getting an expert in employment and human resources is a very smart move on my part, I think. So Natasha, because this podcast is all about career transition and making changes and being successful while going through a transition, let's start way, way back when you were a little girl. And what were your early career aspirations?
That's really easy. I was a mad keen tennis player. I used to play 7 days a week. I played Saturday morning comp, Saturday afternoon comp, Sunday morning comp, Sunday afternoon comp. And I wanted to be a professional tennis player. And I was very lucky in the sense, Jane, I was able to look out of a window in my house and I could see who was on the tennis courts after school. And then I'd go down and I'd just say, can I play? You know, can we have a hit? And so through that, I got a great social network and I used to travel around New South Wales and play tournaments and I was sponsored and I just loved it. And I'm showing my age now. I used to get up in the middle of the night to watch Wimbledon and my favorite player at the time was Chrissy Evert. And, you know, it was just a passion piece for me. I loved it. But then I realized I wasn't good enough to become a professional tennis player, much to my sadness.
Oh, but I mean, the thing is that you were sponsored. But yes, I remember Chris Everett, Martina Navratilova. Yes. I mean, it really, they were so inspiring as well. And even today's, you know, tennis players are great. But I think having that as an aspiration shows that, okay, so the competitiveness, the dedication, the fitness and how important it is, because it takes a lot to be a successful sports star. And so having done lots of stalking, and I've known you for so long, Natasha, as well, you've had an interesting career journey and you've made a number of transitions. And so many people wonder how can they transition from A to B, you know, from one job function or one industry to another. And you've done it very successfully. So starting out, you were working at Westpac in fixed income settlements. And so you had your financial career for a while, but then you transitioned into HR. So what was it that caused that shift in your career?
Yeah, that's a great question. I if we take even a step backwards, leading on from the desire to be a professional tennis player, I decided I wanted to be a physio. I was thinking a sports physio, but I didn't actually get the marks for that. So my dad was actually working in banking and finance at the time. He was a director. And so I figured, to be brutally honest, Jane, I really liked the clothes. So I thought I'd go and start working in banking and finance. Anyway, so I did that for a little while. And I was lucky enough that a senior manager saw something in me. And she said, I think you'd be really good at personnel management, as it was called way back then. And so I went off, I didn't go straight to uni. I went to TAFE because I didn't think I was clever enough to go to uni. And I started studying personnel management at TAFE. And then 2 years into my 3-year course, I decided it was time to release myself onto the world and get my first HR job. Well, nobody was interested in hiring me because guess what? I didn't have any experience. But the recruitment agencies were. And so I started applying for recruitment agency roles. And I can remember it was the first interview I ever went to. They said to me, sell me that telephone. And I said, what? And they said, sell me the telephone. And I came out of the interview actually quite traumatized, but I realized it was much more a sales job, but they were the only ones who were interested in hiring me. And so I ended up getting a job in recruitment, did that for a couple of years. What I learned about myself in that role, Jane, was while I was great at account management, those sales were really hard. I hated cold calling people. I found that really difficult. But after that, I actually had a girlfriend who saw an ad in a paper for one of the professional consulting firms. And she said, I've got a really strong feeling about this. You need to apply for this job. And I did. And literally within 3 weeks, I was on a plane to Brisbane and starting my career out in professional services within a recruitment role, which I think is important. That was my transition in. I went in as a recruiter and then I broadened my skills out from that and then, you know, diversified into HR.
Yeah, I think it's so important for people to know what those transferable skills are as well. And funny thing is, I also had a stint at recruitment. And one of the things that I did not like about it was the sales aspect, because a lot of people go into recruitment and they think it's all about helping people. Yes, you help the person who gets the job, but what about all the others who don't get the job? And the focus on sales is so heavy. And there are some people who are born salespeople or become very good salespeople, but others, it's more to do with relationship development. And I think that's where we're on the same page, really, because for you, it's all about the people and the relationships. And I feel the same.
Absolutely. And I actually say that's how I learned how not to run a business.
That's right.
So I did learn something from that experience.
Yeah, which is great. And then you've had a very interesting career path, because you've worked for big names like Swiss Re and Accenture, and you've worked around the world too, because you were sent to London to do something very interesting and challenging, weren't you?
Yes. So I was having a great time, and I had actually, and here's a great tip for people. I had started off in that recruitment role. Then I went into more of a generalist HR junior role. And then a promotion came up to the next level to go from an analyst to a specialist, as they were called at the time. Now, I was absolutely not the main contender for that role. But what I did was I went and did my homework. And I actually went and interviewed partners in that group that I was potentially going for the role, and asked them what were their challenges, what did they need from their HR person, and so on. So I did all that research. And so when it came time to go for the job interview, I actually got the job, to the surprise of most of my peers who were significantly more experienced than I were, and actually more ready for that job. But I ended up getting that job. And so I think, you know, preparation is absolutely key. But when I went to London, that came about because I wanted to go to London. I actually put my hand up and said, can I transfer to your London office? I've got a visa, I can work there. But when I arrived, it was on the 4th of September, 2001. And everyone knows what happened in that month. And so I arrived newly in London and walked straight into a large scale redundancy process, of which I'd never done a redundancy in London. And in actual fact, London law was about 10 years ahead of Sydney or Australian law. So I needed to learn very quickly how to make somebody redundant. And it was technically quite different. But what I knew was the skill that I had was also that it's that people skill and that ability to quick study and to get across it and to make people feel as comfortable as they can in what is a absolutely, for many, traumatic circumstance. But that was my experience. And what I learned about myself there was, you know, these partners, who many of them were absolute rocket scientists, they literally were incredibly clever people. But when it came to having that very difficult conversation, they fell to pieces. They really did. And that was not ideal, not ideal at all.
Yeah, when it comes to redundancies, it's such a challenge. People think, oh, the poor people who've been affected, but also the person delivering the message is affected too, because so often they're managers who really love their team and they want to keep them, but there's this directive to to have a redundancy and then having to let go a team member can be very, very draining as well. And I found with, because I've supported a lot of people through the notification of when they're told. And when you say, look, here's some outplacement support for you, it just goes straight over their head because they can't hear. It's almost like there's a buzzing in your head. Like, I can't believe this. And they feel a sense of panic. Yes.
Yes.
And so for you being there to be able to guide them through would have made a huge difference.
And that's where I really, whilst it was difficult, that's where I really got the buzz from, was transitioning and helping these people through what was a really difficult situation. And I really did see all levels of the spectrum. I had one person who literally got up, threw her arms around me and gave me an enormous hug because I'd just paid for her MBA. She was planning on leaving and going and doing that anyway, through to people who were literally begging for their jobs because that redundancy meant that they no longer were able to stay in the UK and they would have to move back home. So I think it has to be done with a lot of dignity, a lot of preparation, and I think a lot of Australian businesses are going to need to absolutely get their head around this because I think a lot of redundancies are about to happen here.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the large organizations, they know to get professional support in order to do this because how they deliver the message is important. It could be highly litigious as well because it's got to have been done very fairly. You've got to prove that, you know, it's a redundant role. And also, I think the important thing is for those who are affected, they need to realize that a redundancy, you were not fired.
No.
It's a business decision. And so it doesn't impact your ability to perform in any role or your expertise. And you could still hold your head up high because it's a business decision. And redundancies are commonplace these days.
Oh, you meet people who have been made redundant 3 or 4, 5 times in their career. And that's probably a little bit of bad luck, but it is a transition point. And I think with great outplacement support and great support in general, and you know, that will help them transition through that time. And it's an opportunity is the other way to look at it. Yeah. Maybe they've wanted to do something different for some time.
Yeah, that's right. There's always, whenever there are challenges, there are always opportunities. And you had another interesting opportunity, Natasha, when you were sent to India. Tell us about your India experience.
Yes. So I was working in London and India was absolutely expanding for the business and they needed a HR manager to go down there and play the interim HR manager role while they were finding a local to play that role. And they already had a setup there, but they were hiring 500 people in 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to get that opportunity. And so I flew down to India. Interestingly, I actually, and this is how your life can change, I actually agreed to marry a man the night before I flew to India that I'd only been dating for 3 weeks. So there were a lot of transitions happening in my life at that time, just quietly, Jay. And I went down to India and no one knew I was turning up. So I literally walked into this chaotic office and the lights used to go on and off because, you know, there wasn't enough electricity. Illness was a problem for a lot of us expats. We got very sick when we arrived and I literally had to go and find my boss and I didn't find him to speak to him for 3 weeks. So I had no guidance as to what I was doing or no remit or scope. So I just had to make it up. I just had to go, well, given what I've found myself in, this is what I need to do. So I actually went and found all the managers that I could find and started to pull together an exec meeting and said, what are our issues? What are we dealing with? What are some of the challenges? And the challenges were very different to what I'd ever experienced before. For example, I had a team of 5. None of them had ever worked for a woman before. They were all going to get married before me, but none of them had actually met their partners yet. And so on top of that, we had SARS outbreak, which is very timely given what we're experiencing with COVID-19. And so we had to sort of manage that from a risk perspective. But also we had chickenpox outbreak. Now, chickenpox in India, not a lot of people are inoculated against that. So that can wipe out a lot. And then you've got an issue where as the firstborn son, if your mum or dad gets sick, you have to go home. There's no choice. That's it. You just leave your job and you go and help out at home. So for me, it was a baptism of fire in terms of trying to get my head around some of the cultural challenges and differences and still be productive and, you know, make sure that I was doing a job that they were happy with. So it was an interesting time. I had a great time down there. but it was challenging.
By fire, Natasha. My goodness. And also, how impulsive of you to meet someone in 3 weeks, get engaged, and then go to India. My goodness.
I know. I do have to put the caveat on that one of our mutual best friends introduced us, so I knew that he wasn't an axe murderer. He was a pretty decent guy, and we've been married coming up for 16 years, so it obviously worked.
Oh, and a wonderful man too.
Yes.
But actually, isn't it interesting how little twists and turns in your life and it can really change? But good on you for really coming to terms with the cultural differences as well as all the health issues during a time when you had to hire 500 people. I mean, what a big job to really be flying by the seat of your pants to get it done. So I think, you know, in order to be employable and a valuable employee, you have to be adaptable and flexible, have a proactive approach to things. And that's exactly what you have. And I think in challenging times, especially now with, you know, COVID and everything affecting so many jobs, people who want to stand out to get their next job, you've really got to demonstrate the right attitude and how you can be a solution to people's problems. And you solved a lot of problems, you know, in that particular assignment. Now, moving forward in your career, so you've had a very successful human resources career, and then you decided to bite the bullet and transition into entrepreneurship. And you run this fabulous business called Employee Matters. Now, what prompted you to run your own business?
The answer is actually necessity. Like many women, and I heard a statistic yesterday, 38% of founders now in Australia, Australian businesses are women. So I had had this successful corporate career. Then I had three babies in 3 years. There's a pace thing happening here, Jane. I see sense as I'm repeating this back to you. So we had three babies in 3 years, and that was not conducive to a corporate career in my view at that time. So I started doing a little bit of consulting, you know, through friends of a friend. Someone needed some help with HR and I'd go in and do a couple of pieces of work. But then I got a role and I started doing some work for a business, and I actually realized over that I actually felt I could do it better, which was a bit of a revelation, especially, and I share this because about 5 or 6 years before, a girlfriend of mine started a business. And I can remember having coffee with her in Manly, and she was telling me about her business idea. And I was quite literally terrified for her. I thought, you are so brave to be doing that. So I wasn't ready then. But obviously, by this point, I was ready. So I did at the time, I actually went onto the Australian government website and I filled out their business plan, which is 57 pages. It took a lot of work. But what it gave me was a really good understanding of what am I getting myself into and making me think in another way. Fast forward, we've been going 8.5 years now. Being an entrepreneur, I think, has a lot of those skills that I started to develop earlier in my career. I think you need to, a couple of things that have been absolutely critical to me is prolific rather than perfect. You've got to get in there and sort it out as you go. You need to learn. Education is absolutely key. I've spent about $180,000 on my business education over the last 8 years. And I don't think I'd be sitting here if I hadn't done that. I'm not saying everyone has to spend that much, but I am a continuous learner. It is never done. And the breadth of experience you need in running a business, you might be a great HR person, but you actually need so many different skills to be a successful entrepreneur. And I think it's really important that people acknowledge that. Otherwise, their businesses will struggle. And I think a lot of people will go into business now, Jane, because those other roles won't exist. But there's never been a better time to go into business with digitization, you know, your ability to niche into different areas. And I think a lot of people will become consultants initially, and some will thrive in that and never ever go back to a corporate career. Some will realize actually they need that comfort of a corporate career and that security and that I think that lack of ambiguity. You know, as an entrepreneur, you think you've just got it sorted and then you get whacked with another problem. So it's a bit of a roller coaster ride, but I would not have it any other way now. Although I love HR and I'm incredibly passionate about HR, I love being a business owner even more.
Yeah, I think it's so rewarding running your own business. And like for me, I run my own coaching practice. And I've never been happier. It's been nearly 20 years now. Can you believe it?
And do you know what they say, Jane, though? Once you've been your own boss, you can't go back.
Exactly. But you know, I made the transition at the age of 40, so I'm 61 now. Oh my goodness, how did I get so old? But I feel so young. I feel like, oh, I have so much energy because I make my own decisions and I can create this. And so, and the same thing for you, because with Employee Matters, you've created a really good business to support people in business in lots of different ways. So it's the consulting that you have, but then you also have almost like a do-it-yourself kit that can help business as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I have, when I started, and this is what I mean by you learn as you go. So when I started, I was deciding that we were going to help small business because I was incredibly passionate about small business and how hard it is. I still am. But what I quickly realized was many small businesses, even if they had any extra cash, they wouldn't spend it on HR. They'd do it themselves. So I built this toolkit called the Hireify Toolkit to give them all the tools and templates they need to do it themselves. Sort of, 80-20 rule. We've done 20% of the work. You've got to do 80% of the work. And that is really, really important. We've got the consulting arm, which is HR support. We call them employee experts that will do anything from your filing right through to strategic HR. And I think what we've done there is tap into a goldmine of talent. We're in the flexible workforce. I've been saying that we could work flexibly for years and no one ever believed me. And I started my business in my bedroom 8.5 years ago. And overnight, we have proved that not every business and not every employee, but the vast majority can work from home and do it productively. But it requires different skills and it requires different management skills. But I tapped into a market of females predominantly who had very successful HR careers but didn't want to work a 60-hour week anymore. So they work on a portfolio basis, which has been great. We also do recruitment, although we're not doing much of that at the moment, except in allied health. And the other thing we've done, and I would encourage everyone to think about digitization, is we developed a tool called Employee Metrics, which is a diagnostic tool to assess your current levels of HR compliance, risk, putting a price on that risk and best practice. And that's going to become a SaaS platform. So we're venturing into that SaaS space.
I think it's so important to be able to pivot your businesses as well. But you're absolutely right. You know, so many things that we've learned because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And for 5 years now, I've been coaching remotely, leveraging video conferencing, Skype initially, and then Zoom because it's a bit more stable. And then when COVID hit and people said, oh, what are you going to do? And I think I'm going to carry on as I've always been doing. And
situation normal.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, it's busier than ever because of the number of people who need help as well. However, it will be nice when we transition back to face-to-face for, you know, group workshops and training and things like that, because I think a lot of us get our energy from being with people face-to-face. Although doing things remotely can be just as powerful, I found. There are, and I'm sure that you found this as well, because I do workshops that are 3 or 4 hours long and people still have energy at the end, and I still have energy after delivering at the end. Because if you feel passionate about something as you do, then that's our reason for being, isn't it?
Yes. And that's because I'm a speaker as well as an author, and I'll do gigs where there's 500, 600 people in an audience and I come off and I'm buzzing. That's my fun space. That's where I have the most fun. But I've also done webinars with 850 people. But that has only happened since COVID. And it requires a similar skill set, more energy and a real ability to draw people in and keep their attention. And it's much more draining because there's much more giving required on a Zoom facilitated event than on an audience where you can really derive a lot of energy from that audience.
Yeah. A friend of mine who's a speaker, professional speaker, he likes to say you have to be yourself but amplified.
Yes.
So you really have to amplify the way you come across over the airwaves or over the screen and the internet in order to be able to create that impact. Now your book, Natasha, Hired to Fired, is a very good book too.
Thank you. Yes, wrote that, it's second edition now, Amazon bestseller. And it's interesting. I don't know, you've written a book, so you know what it's like. When I first wrote the book, I remember I needed some distance from it. It's like, it's not you, it's me. You know, I just can't read you at the moment. And now I'll pick it up and I'll go, actually, this is reasonably good, you know, and I get a lot of positive feedback from it. And it has been written in a way to help small to medium business owners understand HR and understand, more importantly, what are the benefits of doing HR better? Because I think a lot of people almost think your employees will work it out or they'll learn by osmosis. And we're all about, your employees are your greatest asset and also potentially your greatest liability and should be treated as such. And I think, you know, people need to really understand that, you know, when you build assets and you build that investment in your employees, then they do become more productive. And we had a productivity issue in this country prior to COVID, and it's absolutely key for businesses at the moment to have an A team than ever before, because, you know, that A team will get you out of this mess.
Yeah, and you have to hire the right people. And very often, especially small business owners, they don't really know how to go through that recruitment process effectively. And so I think hired to fired is a really good reference point. And I'm glad that you said that it's now in the second edition. Actually, by coincidence, look, Natasha, on the video, this, my book, Navigating Career Crossroads, is in its second edition as well.
Excellent.
It was published 5 years ago, but so much has changed with regard to navigating your career crossroads. And so much has changed with regard to HR as well. So I think
changing more so.
Oh, I know.
JobKeeper.
Oh my goodness. That's where businesses must get professional guidance. Don't try and wing it on your own, because the processes are changing. The requirements keep changing, and it's doing a lot of businesses' heads in. So we need someone like you to be able to guide them through it, because you stay on top of every little change that's going on. So now, Natasha, if people want to find you, they would go to employeematters.com.au and, of course, find Natasha Hawker on LinkedIn. And what's your Twitter handle, Natasha?
At Natasha Hawker. And then you can also check us out on our podcast, which is HR Heroes. Or you can sign up for our newsletter, because we give a lot of video tips away on that. I think we've got about a library of about 186 video tips on there.
Fantastic. Well, go to employeematters.com.au, find HR Heroes, a podcast, subscribe, and of course, subscribe to your career podcast as well. You know, everything we do, Natasha, it's just such a natural collaboration, isn't it?
Do you know what? It's really interesting. I was talking to someone who's just transitioning from a corporate career, and I was providing her with some, you know, 8 years of wisdom and what I wouldn't do and what I would do. And I said, one of the things I've really loved about transitioning out of corporate and into entrepreneurs is the entrepreneur community is incredibly strong and it's really supportive. I often found in corporate it was very competitive and everyone was going for the same sort of promotions, where I think in that entrepreneur world, there's a lot of giving, you know, there's a lot of, well, look, you know, there's a logical partnership between you and I. Why don't we help each other? Because if I do better, you do better, and vice versa.
The partnerships are really what makes a difference. And I think when it comes to building a business, I mean, I have a Build Your Business masterclass as well and bootcamp, but having more entrepreneurs there sharing their stories is very important. And so, yes, there are collaborations in store, Natasha. Thank you so much for your time. And we'll have to have you on again when COVID is over to see how businesses are picking themselves up again.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me, Jane.
If you enjoy your career podcast, please hop over to iTunes and leave a review, because that's how we get to reach more people. And if you need help in your career, go to www.thecareersacademy.online, where you'll be able to find lots of online programs as well as one-on-one coaching with me. See you soon.